Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Well, welcome to Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. And Spirit of Film is about movies. And movie audiences today are once more being challenged by films that make them think, inspire them on deeper levels, and challenge the status quo. So each week we showcase today's top independent filmmakers who are bringing to light important issues and ideas and evoking what I call the spirit of film, which is a metaphor for the movie's magical power to transform our lives. And today we have with us Lee and Shane Stanley, producers of the number one movie in America, Gridiron Gang, based on a 1993 Emmy Award-winning documentary. So welcome to the show, Lee and Shane.
Thank you,
Randall.
And Shane, you have a bit of a true life event happening for you today. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, thank you first for having us and acknowledging today is my first one-year wedding anniversary.
Well, congratulations.
So, thank you very much. I'm very blessed. I got a great wife who's stood by me for many years through a lot of thick and a lot of thin.
Well, since this documentary was first made in 1993, which was on television, it's been sort of over 10 years since you've managed to bring the story to the screen. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened along the way and why it's taken so long to get this film out there to the public?
Yeah, this is Lee talking, Randall. It took all this time because we wanted it done right. It was a film that we believed in tremendously. My wife and I initially produced the documentary. Shane co-produced it and did second unit direction on it. And we knew we had a winner, and when it aired on television, that affirmed it. And we tossed around with a lot of people that wanted to do the picture. And we got to the point finally where if the vision is not going to be reflective of the intent of the picture and the impact of the picture, then we're not going to do it. And fortunately, we partnered with Sony Pictures, Columbia Pictures, and made the picture that we're very proud of.
Well, one of the things that the film explores is the it takes viewers behind the walls of a juvenile prison in Los Angeles to highlight the role of sports in providing direction for troubled youth. And it stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and he plays Sean Porter, who actually was a person who you profiled in the original documentary.
Right.
Right, and Sean still is a real person. Very active in probation. He now oversees 5 probation camps and has a passion to turn young lives around. And that's what was reflected in our documentary and is carried through in our feature film, Gridiron Gang.
Well, one of the things that the film goes into in depth is the lives that the characters are, what happens to them before they get into prison and start the football team. So did you have, did the studio give you some problems in how much of that violence to show, and would they feel that it wouldn't fit with the story, or what was sort of the thing that you worked out in terms of the script?
Not at all. It was very important for us as filmmakers and the studio to get across where these kids really came from. You know, there are a lot of films that use sports to motivate and sports to bring up the lost. And instead of just saying these kids are bad and they're behind these walls, it was very important for us to show the world exactly where these kids come from and what it takes to get them where they are. And the studio, one thing that they wanted to do is, going back, is to honor the documentary that my dad and our family produced back in 93, and that was the key thing. But in a documentary, we didn't have the backstory of these kids. We started the film with day one of practice and building a team. It's very important to get into the backstories of these kids.
Well, one of the key things that the film explores is the role models for the young youth who are in the prison. And one of the aspects that Sean Porter plays in this film as a character and as a real life person is sort of it gives them the beginning of guidance as sort of a rite of passage that they've really never had in their lives. Can you talk about the actual kids who are in the prison, or I should call them young men, sort of what is it that you feel would be beneficial in terms of the juvenile detention facilities in Los Angeles? What could they do besides finding things like football? What do you see are solutions to the problems of the lives of these kids?
Shane, you want me to field this one?
Please do.
Randall, the problem begins not in the prison. The problem begins at home. And, you know, what can we do? You got to remember, by the time a kid gets locked up, his parents have given up on him if they've invested any heart to him at all. The school system has given up. The courts have given up. The judges have given up. And they're tossed in a probation camp, a jail, whatever you want to call it. The sad thing is that the kid knows that everybody's given up on him, except for his homies, his gang boys, the thugs that he runs on the street with, most of them anyway. What can be done? You know, we've learned over the years, Randall, any kid, doesn't care what you think until they think you care. The role of Sean Porter that Dwayne The Rock Johnson plays is a classic, perfect example of someone that cares about a young life, knows that that young life can be shaped in the right direction if he will take the time, meaning the adult will take the time to walk the walk with that kid. Of course, it goes right back to before you can help any kid, no matter what his situation is, the kid has to want help first. Programs I have found over the years, and our family's been volunteering to kids in camp, euphemism again, in jail since 1982, programs, it's not the program that shines through. That's why most programs don't last a long time. It's the people that are investing their time, their heart, their soul, their resources in a young life. And when that young life discerns, senses that you care about them, that's when the responses start to happen. That's what you see in Gridiron Gang.
Well, certainly the audience responded extremely positively, and the movie last weekend was number one in America. And when I went to a press screening, I heard something at the end of the film, which you don't normally hear in movies, which the audience, about more than half the audience, sat there and applauded for about half a minute.
Wasn't that great? My wife Linda and I went to see the film last weekend as well here in Westlake Village, California. Same thing happened, and boy, did that feel good.
Yeah, I saw the film in the San Fernando Valley at Saturday night, and the same thing happened, and my friend turned to me and said, I haven't seen this since Jaws when they killed the shark.
Yeah, well, it reminded me when I was sitting there, and I was applauding myself, it reminded me as far back as 1976 in the movie Rocky.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, this feels like the response are like Rocky, so I think you have a really big word-of-mouth hit on your hands here.
Thank you.
And I think that this coming weekend you're going to see that you're going to stay at number one. At least I hope so.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, as they say, we know, too.
Well, the critical response has been kind of mixed to your film. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you're pushing buttons on me, but I will, and Shane, then you can recover me or save me after this.
Go ahead, set this way.
You know, I have found that someone that doesn't, and this is the producer talking, but so what? I have found that people that give this picture a bad review, and I'm not talking about if they don't like somebody's performance, I'll buy that, but first of all, Gridiron Gang is based on a true story. I would bet that one-third of this movie is a direct lift from our documentary, which is what we wanted and what everybody wanted anyway. And unless you have, if you have avoided contributing something to people in need, especially young people, if you don't know the heart and desperation of young people and what it takes to get them from point A to point B when everyone else has given up on them, then I think you have a sour attitude. And frankly, and I didn't do this, but I wanted to call up the reviewers that basically mocked the program and mocked the commitments and so forth to say, guys, spend a day with me. Come out to camp. Meet these kids that are desperately looking for people to cheer them on and to encourage them. So my feeling for the sour reviews are, hey, you know, go live life. Find out what it feels like to invest in another life, and then maybe you'll be able to celebrate the victory at Gridiron Gang. Recover me, Shane.
Well, that's pretty well said. I mean, we had a screening, Randall, at the juvenile prison 10 days ago for the kids at the camp we made the film at. And they did an interview, and they asked, you know, how is this night as important to you as anything else, and the reviews. And let me tell you something. Two thumbs up are great to get. they don't really sell a whole lot of tickets, and when it's all said and done, I don't think people say, well, that film got one thumb up or no thumbs up. What's most important to us is what the kids who gave us an intimate look at their life, who trusted us with telling their story, think. And when the movie was over and they gave it a standing applause, they laughed, they cried, they cheered. That means more to me than any review. Reviews are forgotten. What I care about, and what I know my father and the filmmakers and Dwayne and Exhibit care about, is making a positive impact in these kids' lives. If we could turn around one kid with our work or shed light on something that people didn't know about that'll get them to invest or instill a passion in them to care, I don't care about the reviews. They mean nothing.
Well, those are the kind of films that we talk about each week on this program, whether they be about social change, spiritual transformation, or just a very inspired look at a particular subject. So I'm right along with you on that one.
Thank you.
Now, when you were actually shooting this film at the detention facility, which is actually a real place, Camp Kilpatrick in Los Angeles, did the studio have some concerns over security when you were doing the principal photography?
Well, initially they did. First, it was very important to Shane and me that we filmed Gridiron Gang in the actual existing prison and that the inmates remain in the prison while we were there. At first, the studio said, well, we're going to have to do it there to afford the picture the way we want to do it. Then after we got permission to film it, and basically we took over the prison for 6 weeks, then the studio had a major concern. Wait a minute. This is a working prison with violent juvenile offenders. What if there's a riot? What if there's a robbery? What if there's an assault? What if there's a murder? And all of a sudden our green light for a Gridiron Gang became a cautious yellow light. And fortunately, one of the studio executives, Gary Martin, said to the brass at the studio, said, look, this film will happen the way Lee and Shane say it will happen in the jail. I give you 100% confidence it'll work. And fortunately, everybody stepped up. And fortunately, after 6 weeks of very intense filming and moving prisoners all over the place, we did not have one negative incident.
That's right.
Well, congratulations on that. That's a lesson to the studios to trust their producers.
Well, and I got to say, we couldn't have had a better studio. We couldn't have had a better anybody behind us than Columbia Pictures. I mean, the studio, that was a valid concern. Frankly, I wouldn't let anybody go into a working juvenile prison with violent offenders in it. But they wanted the picture. They supported the vision of the picture. And frankly, I hope we have the privilege of working with Columbia again.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, you have a very assorted array of wonderful young actors in this movie. Can we talk a little bit about how they were cast, especially, of course, you have Dwayne Johnson in Exhibit, but how did you find the other actors like Jade Yorker?
I'll tell you, Jade Yorker had done some work, here and there, and he was flown out from New York. He's a street kid. I mean, he runs his own. He's not a mama's boy by any stretch of the imagination. He came in, read with Dwayne, did a screen test, knocked it out of the park. But most of the kids actually didn't even have SAG cards. I mean, Setu, who plays Junior, which is a key role in the film, we basically hit the pavement and went to a Samoan church and said, you recommend any Samoan actors that have got some street sense and some street, swagger to them? And they said, well, there's this kid named Setu you have to meet. And that happened with a lot of the kids hadn't acted before. And it was important to Phil, our director, and to us to have kids that really weren't Hollywood versions of what tough kids are, but kids that have really lived on the street. Some of the kids in the film have lost siblings to gang rivalry. Some of the kids on the street in our film have done time. And that was very important to us. And we got very, very fortunate getting the kids that we did. That were talented in front of the camera, but had a savvy and a swagger of the streets because of their upbringing.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that we worked with Homeboy Industries, which is a nonprofit organization that literally is there for people when they get out of prison. And as Shane said, we wanted everything about this picture to be legitimate, to be realistic. We didn't want Hollywood to find its way into this movie. We wanted it real. And I'm very proud of the way this picture came off.
Well, I'd like to take you back, Lee, to the original documentary in 1993 that you created. And that was first aired where on television?
It was syndicated, Randall, across the nation.
Okay. And when you created this documentary, how did you actually get the idea for it and actually get permission to shoot there? And what was sort of the involvement of that original project years ago?
Well, I had done about a half a dozen television specials featuring kids that were locked up and did a whole series of them. And then I was done. I wanted to go on to other things. And my wife, Linda, saw an article in the paper about the football team up at Camp Kilpatrick and suggested I do it. I really didn't want to do it. I said, I'm all documentary out of time to do feature films. And she, I won't say hounded me, Linda's not like that, but she just kept the article in front of me. And finally I found out more about it and instantly discovered exactly why she felt so passionate about it. I got permission from the chief probation officer at the time, and we went in to make the film. And what we discovered on day one of filming is that the wonderful Sean Porter, the coach, was opposed to us. And frankly, he didn't want us in the camp, and he made it difficult for us. And I pulled him aside. Actually, I pulled him in. I pulled all the coaches in, and I pulled Shane in, who was second unit director at the time. And we went into a conference room, and I said, you're making it impossible for us to make the film. And Sean basically said, you know, I've got things to do, and I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to give place to you guys. And I said, well, we're going to make the film anyway. I share your vision, except my vision far exceeds what you're doing right here. I understand what you're doing here, but my vision for your football program and this documentary far exceeds what you understand is happening. And I said, I can't make the film that will benefit us all without your support. I will do it. I'm going to make the movie, but you need to decide right now whether you trust me or not. And he said, okay, what do you want? I said, let me make my film. And he said, basically, you got it. And from that step on, it was nothing but support from Sean Porter and his coaching staff. The picture was made. Excuse me. We had a one-hour special. They went on to be runner-up for world champion or state champions or whatever the CIF is. And we had to do more on it. It ended up being a two-hour special. Shane and I and Linda caught the vision that this would make a wonderful feature film. Of course, nobody agreed. They thought it was a nice little television film. It got on the air, did great ratings, and every studio but one wanted the rights to do it as a feature film.
Now, after you got permission to film at the detention camp from I would imagine would be the county probation office, mm-hmm. You met, Lee, you met with Paul Higa, and what was that like as far as kind of pitching this to him?
Well, this is Randall. Paul was the chief probation officer when we wanted to do the feature film.
Oh, okay.
And Paul was actually the camp director when we did the film, the documentary film. But when I met with Paul Higa, as I said, the studio said, we have to make this at the camp just because then it becomes affordable. And then the big challenge was getting permission from Paul Higa, the now chief probation officer, or the then chief probation officer. And I met with Paul again, and we'd known each other for years, and I'd given him a 10-page presentation of how we were going to execute this without escapes, murder, robbery, you know, the whole bit. And when I was done with my presentation, Paul asked one question. He said, how will the kids benefit? And Shane and I had already outlined a concept on how the kids in camp would specifically benefit from our presence there. Number one, we were going to teach, Shane and I would teach a 12-week film course to those that wanted to take it at the camp, which ended up, what, Shane, about a 16-week film course?
16-week class.
It always ends up longer. So you actually taught the inmates about movie making.
Yes, we did, and then we had special guests. Obviously, The Rock was one of them. Our director was one. Mm-hmm. Department heads came in and spoke. Shane spoke. I spoke. And then during the daytime, when the kids were not in class, and they have classes at the facility, you know, regular school classes, we would bring small groups of them. Our film class, I think, was around 25 or 26 kids consistently out of 110 kids, and that's all we could fit in the room. We would bring groups from the class around to different departments, I mean, like to the camera department, to talk to the director of photography, to explain to the kids, this is what we're doing, This is what we're executing. Watch how we do it. We take them around to the stunt coordinator, to the wardrobe person, to the makeup person, so these kids would understand not only what they were learning in the class, but also see it carried out in an actual production.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So did you actually have any of the inmates say to you that, this sounds great, I want to get into movies after that?
You know, it's funny you ask that. We actually hired a couple of kids from the class upon their release. One of the kids went on to become a union carpenter and has his union card and is working on all sorts of Hollywood big films. Somebody in our art department, set designing, took him under his wing, got him his union card, and he's doing great. Matter of fact, one of the kids, the first kid that my father ever encountered in a juvenile detention facility back in 1981 or 82, worked as a carpenter on our film. So, yeah, a lot of these kids, some of the kids from the class went on to PA for us on various projects, commercials, music videos that we do. The class was a success. The kids found some, it ignited a passion in some of these kids and said, you know what, I could do that, or I'd like to try that. And it's overwhelming. I mean, it was exciting to see them do it.
That's very inspiring. I think that there's a lesson to be learned there for in many ways from both the local city government and from local business to do something for the kids and how they can get involved. Just get in there and offer something to them that they think could be worthwhile, you know, when they get out.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Randall, and I'll say this. The film's tagline is one goal, a second chance. And somebody said it once, I don't know who, but it was, let's not talk about the second chance as much as let's talk about how many of these kids never had a first chance. You know, a lot of these kids start with three strikes against them, and I don't just mean in the penal system. And that's what it's about, is giving these kids an opportunity or a path or an avenue, something that's good.
Well, that's what your movie is definitely, I'm sure, it's not only intended to entertain, but also has a purpose, which is making audiences aware of juvenile crime and how adults, especially parents, can give youngsters direction. And Lee, you said in an earlier interview that I read is that the problem with juvenile crime is not getting solved in this country. And of course, juvenile crime turns into adult crime. And I'm hoping is that people will realize, number one, that there is a kid inside these kids, these criminals. But secondly, it begins in the home. If a kid is not parented properly, there's a lot of guys on the street that'll bring them up and teach them how to kill, how to stab, how to rob, how to deal, whatever they need. So can you kind of give me an idea of a transitional element that these kids could, that you could offer them beyond the film that they can hang on to, who see, you know, kids, I'm sure there's a lot of street kids in LA who are going to see this movie, and what would you like them to think, what would you like them to get out of it?
Wow, that's a good question, Randall. I mean, first, what we hope is that it inspires, it breathes hope into basically hopeless situation. I'm talking about parenting, I'm talking about the kids themselves, I'm talking about those in the probation departments and social, child social services. It inspires all of them that, like, hey, you know what? There is hope if we invest in. I make no mistake about it. I'm a born-again Christian. I believe that God changes hearts and he changes lives. And of all the kids that I've dealt with over the years one-on-one, the ones whose lives have turned around and have stayed turned around are those the ones that have found the Lord. Now, you know, you say, what would you advise these kids? You know, it does go back to the home, Randall. If a parent has never been taught how to parent, then they're going to make some huge mistakes. I made mistakes. I had parents. You know, I didn't end up in jail. My parents were good people. But the fact of the matter is, I learned some pretty basic things, which I raised my son under those principles. Yeah, I wasn't a perfect dad, but at the same time, I knew basically the way to do it. What is most frightening today, if we really look at it, if we stop all the fluff and talk and bureaucracy and champion causes that aren't bearing fruit, the bottom line is, if we don't teach parents how to parent, this is going to happen over and over again, and what I'm finding is each generation is that much further removed from a quality life. The kids that I encountered making Gridiron Gang this movie are the kids of the kids that I encountered back in the 80s when I first started volunteering my time.
Well, you also, what is the name of your production company that you formed together now?
Well, we have Stan Hibben Productions and Visual Arts Entertainment.
Okay. Now, what are you looking to do in terms of your next projects for Stan Hibben? Well, you have actually a couple of things that I noted here. You have a film called Iron Men that you have in development.
Yes.
And can you talk a little bit about that?
Go ahead, Shane.
Well, Iron Men is a story of Dick and Ricky Hoyt, who's been getting a lot of press on everything from Dateline 2020 and Oprah. They're the father-son triathlon team. The son, Ricky, is a spastic quadriplegic. His father, Dick, is in his mid-60s, and they race Ironman and triathlon events. So the father will literally have a boat around his neck with a rope, swims with that, with Ricky in it. Then they cycle with him on a seat pod, and then they run with him in one of those little pushers, similar to what moms jog with their kids in, but a little bigger. And they were kept from competing for many, many years and have gone on. They have entered hundreds and hundreds of Ironman and triathlon events. They become one of the top motivational speakers in the world. The hurdles and obstacles that this father-son team has overcome to not only just, all they wanted to do was race. That's all they wanted to do. Rick felt whole and complete when his dad pushed him and swam and rode a bike with him, all these things he couldn't physically do. And the father got great joy and obviously bonded with his son in a way, like no other. And their story is just amazing on how they went from not even being allowed to compete, basically being some of the most featured platform motivational speakers in our country.
Yeah, and we like to do films that, the majority of our films, Randall, that we want to do are victory pieces. And I don't mean corny, sappy stuff. I mean people, I don't like negative films. I don't like dark films. I don't like slasher films. Period. I don't. What I hope, and I speak for my son, is that when people go into the theater to watch a Shane and Lee Stanley picture, they come out feeling better, rejuvenated, something, but they feel better than they did going in.
That's it.
Well, that's terrific. Well, we got about a minute and a half till break here. And Lee and Shane, would you be opposed to possibly taking some phone calls, questions from listeners?
Oh, absolutely. It'd be great.
Okay.
Be fine.
So we're going to do that after break. I just want to let everyone know that after our break, if you're interested in calling in, you can call in at toll-free at 1-866-472-5795. Again, that's 1-866-472-5795. And you can ask Lee and Shane Stanley questions about Gridiron Gang, about their movies with inspirational themes that they're creating for the future. And one quick question before we go to break here. What do you think is the changing sort of face of Hollywood that you'd like to see, that we're beginning to see in many movies that are more inspirational, both on the spiritual side and on the sort of just a story like your film that has an inspirational theme in it? When we come back from the break, I want you to think about that question, and I want you to also, I'd like to discuss where you think Hollywood's going in the future, and what you think your films, in terms of their message, will play in that role. So we'll be back right after break with more Spirit of Film Conversations and Lee and Shane Stanley talking about Gridiron Gang. We'll be back right after this.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist, Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office, Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing broadcasts each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
200 years ago, Lewis and Clark discovered the West. That is, if you don't count the millions of American Indians who discovered it first. Because Lewis and Clark left one civilization only to find dozens of others that, despite everything, are still here today. Walk with Lewis and Clark at lewisandclark200.org and see what you discover, because their trail winds through us all.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
Tune into Emerging Breakthroughs with hosts Dr. David Kamnitzer and human-animal wellness expert Joyce Jackson as they explore leading-edge ideas in healing, spirituality, and social transformation. In-depth interviews with world-class innovators bring these ideas to life from the unique perspective of considering all living creatures on the planet, both human and animal. Dr. Kamnitzer and Joyce Jackson share their latest discoveries designed to make a significant and immediate positive impact on the quality of life for you, your family, and your animals. Animal Friends. Emerging Breakthroughs broadcasts each Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Seventh Wave Network. Emerging Breakthroughs, a forum for practical visionaries.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
We're back here with Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. We're talking today with Lee and Shane Stanley, producers of the number one movie in America, Gridiron Gang. If you haven't been out to see it, take your friends, go this weekend. It's a wonderful, inspirational film, true life story, and we're talking about the film. And it's in very many aspects, from real life situations to creating a new type of movie in Hollywood, which is really doesn't have a term right now. People have talked about movies that have inspired themes, and they have all different genre names. But I think there's a new sort of type of film that's emerging now more and more, and some people have coined it inspirational cinema, spiritual cinema, and certainly this film would fall into that category of an inspirational type film. Now, Lee and Shane, over the years, Hollywood has sort of they've celebrated movies which talk about social issues, and at the same time, they sort of are in a quandary about how to market them and don't think audiences are really ready for them. I'd like you to kind of give your opinion on making films that actually make people think about things, think about what's going on in the world. Do you think that we need to see definitely more of that in the world, and our audiences are ready for that? And
I think to a certain degree, yes. First off, our job as filmmakers is to entertain. There will always be people that love the special effects, the excitement, the thrill ride movie. But I also think with your art, you can either build up or you can tear down an audience and their emotions and their feelings. And I think in doing the things, obviously as filmmakers, you want to do things that are commercial. You want to do things that will get a good buzz or sell tickets. But I think we have a responsibility as filmmakers to take the high road when we're making movies. People walk out of there with a little bit more than an empty box of popcorn. There has been a lot more inspirational, motivational theme movies. And it's going to be interesting with blockbusters like, you know, Poseidon and a few others that didn't do what people projected them to do. It's going to be interesting over the next few months or next few seasons to see how the studio system and the distribution world changes or adjusts their movies that they're putting down. Absolutely.
Well, one of the statistics that I'm that I see and I've been reading about kids who go to jail, there's about a 75% who return to the streets and go back and end up going back into the prison system.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about what you feel that your not only your film might have an effect on that, but sort of some of the possible solutions that you see that could be done that government, with your experience and being one-on-one directly with these kids, what are the kind of things that they really need?
Go ahead, Dan.
I think what they need, Randall, is first of all an option when they get out. Okay, they're going to go back to the same old. The gangs are waiting for them the moment they get back. You know, it's party time. What communities across our nation, and now it's becoming around the world, have to do is they have to establish programs. Now, I hate the word program because it sounds so impersonal, but let's get athletic programs going. Let's get music programs going. Let's get literary programs going. Something for these kids to feel part of, number one, and to discover their abilities and to be encouraged by people that are, you know, I'll call them experts in that field. The Rock plays, you know, a guy that is a probation officer who has a heart to show that these kids, there's more to life than what you're doing, and in the process, I'm going to make you discover your full potential. What we hope that our film does is the thing that, frankly, all of our television specials have done over the years, and we've been blessed with Emmy Awards and great ratings and reviews and all that business. And when the first picture I did with jailed kids was called Desperate Passage, hosted by the great Michael Landon. And what I believe, and it was the first time that kids in lockup had ever been identifiably photographed. It was a documentary did, and I took 10 kids out of prison and went out to sea for 10 days aboard our sailboat. You know, opposing gang members committed to killing one another on the street. My goal as a filmmaker was, number one, to let the audience see who these kids really are, and secondly, I believe from my investing volunteer time with these kids that indeed there was a kid inside the criminal. What surprised us, and what I'm sure Gridiron Gang, the feature film, will do is this, is we had just an overwhelming response from young kids that were either on the edge of becoming, you know, violent kids or trouble kids, kids in gangs, kids that had been in lockup. We got an overwhelming response from those kids saying, you expressed what I always felt in my heart. I just always felt I was the only one that felt that way, and I had to cover it up. And I'm hoping that Gridiron Gang will make it safe for kids to say, hey, you know what? This life I'm running is nonsense. I want something better in life. I need help. And also, our films inspire parents, not in a corny cliche way, but parents to step up, see that they have an opportunity to be parents with their kids. So there's so many things that we hope for. Bottom line is I hope and I pray that it changes this violent wave that is happening in our country and regarding juveniles.
Okay, well, thanks. Again, if you're interested in talking and calling in to our guest today, you can call 1-866-472-5795. If you're on the Seventh Wave Network website, it's in the numbers in the upper right-hand corner of your screen. One of the things that happened when I was at the press screening was after the audience applauded and the end credits started rolling, normally in a theater that everyone kind of gets up and starts walking out, but then something very interesting happened. We started at the end, in the end credits, you actually show clips of the real 1993 documentary of the film, and it was kind of magical. I actually saw about two-thirds of the audience just sit right back down in any seat that they can find, and were watching these clips at the end, myself included, because I didn't expect that. I was just kind of getting it myself and getting ready to leave the theater after the initial credits, and people just sat there and watched until they were over. It was like it sort of hit them that this wasn't just a movie. People who weren't aware that this was a documentary and that these people were real people, they weren't just characters in a film, this sort of something happened. I actually felt the energy in the theater change. People saw the names of the on the documentary, that saw that Sean Porter was a real person, and
And Junior was a real person. And, you know, it was amazing. Something really magical happened when they made that connection in their minds. So can you talk about why you felt that it was important to put those clips in the end of the film? Did you hope to have that effect? Was that a goal that you were looking to create?
Absolutely. And can I field this one first, son?
Sure.
First of all, Randall, thank you for mentioning that. And this goes, what was so important to us, and this is in response to your question about how I felt about critics that poo-pooed, you know, the whole theme of the movie and so forth. The reason that it's so important to us that the clips from the documentary are in there, as you remember, Randall, it shows these kids crying at the end of the football game when they first lost the game. It shows Sean Porter, the real Sean Porter, laying into these kids about you can be winners, you know, go out there and do what you stand for and all this business. And my wife and I went to the theater the other night and experienced the same thing. People started to go. Mm-hmm. The documentary clips came up, and all of a sudden they were literally standing in the theater.
Well, we actually we have a caller on the line, Lamar from Phoenix. Lamar, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, Lamar, how are you? I'm doing well.
Go ahead and ask your question, Lamar.
Yeah, well, actually, I wanted to first of all apply to you for this this great. I have to say that when I first saw the trailers for it, I thought, oh, well, here's another, you know, End of the Titans, the Wildcat with Goldie Hawn. You know, I thought it was one of those kind of things. But now after listening to your program, I think I ought to give another look, because I really applaud someone who is breaking the Hollywood mold and trying to do something good and uplifting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lamar.
I'm actually an actor and a stand-up comic, and I work on an all-clean platform, and I'm always looking for projects, you know, to do this. And the thing is, there's an audience out there for your message, but it's harder to find it. It wasn't until I was in comedy for 4 or 5 years until someone saw my set and said, hey, it's a really clean set. I don't ever come out to comedy clubs anymore because they're so filthy all the time that I don't even bother coming out. But now that I know that there's some clean comedy out there, I'll kind of, you know, I'll come to your show, you know, something like that. So there's an audience out there for your kind of, in fact, probably more than we think.
Well, you know, I agree with what you're saying, Lamar, and I got to tell you, I do, you know, limited speaking, and hopefully I'll do more of it because I feel so passionate about what we're privileged to do. But so many people say to us, why is Hollywood cranking out such garbage when we don't want it? Why is television such garbage stuff? Well, I can't answer that. You know, I guess the answer is, Lamar, like you're doing, you got to offer something as good, if not better. And that's what I think Hollywood has to do, is we have to come up with projects that we believe in, number one, and we've believed in Gridiron Gang forever, and then to find quality people to get involved with that are in a position to, in essence, fund your work. We were fortunate Shane suggested The Rock, the star in our movie. He saw our documentary and he signed on. The studio caught the vision, and after we opened, the president of production, Matt Tallmack, sent us an email rejoicing in the response of crowds that were in the theater and obviously our numbers and being number one. And he said, this is why we got in the business. So I think we need to, you know, to produce fine programming, whether it's on a comedy stage, Lamar, or in a theater or on television. We can't complain about the bad. What we've got to do is produce stuff that all people are going
right.
to want to see.
Yeah, that's exactly. And I think that along your lines of, like, I don't know how Hollywood got this way. I think that for so long, everybody was trying to just push the edge and like, oh, how can we be more edgy? And it was just kind of a one-upsman in how edgy and how many more explosions can you fit? And I was like, that's not really what everybody wants.
Well, you're right. I agree with you.
Yeah. So I appreciate working. I think there's a whole group of film makers out there, many that I've worked with, that are all kind of on that same line. They're like, yeah, Hollywood's great and has some good films, but there's just so much swing to that side of, you know, just over-sensory, you know, bombardment, that there's people that are really coming around saying, hey, people want something with content, though they can walk out with more than, like you said, an empty bag of popcorn. So excellent job. I will I'll give your film a look for sure.
Thanks, Lamar.
All right, thanks for your call, Lamar. Well, that's exactly my point. I often wonder about that myself. I mean, why I called up the movie theater one day and I wanted to take my son, and I didn't check what was playing, so I picked up the phone and called the local Harkins theater chain here in Arizona, and I heard films like Exorcist 3 and Anaconda and on and on and on. And after about four of these movies, which I know, obviously, I could not take my son to see them, I hung up the phone and I thought, what the heck is wrong here? This is really just... I was sort of in a quandary because... Where are movies that not only are family films, and I'm not talking Disney, G-rated kind of stuff, but films that are really about substance and meaning, and why do you think that we're getting so much, literally, garbage at movies about awful, dark subjects, and like Saw 3, and, you know, what the heck is going on here? When is Hollywood going to get the message that audiences are... that they want something with more substance, they want something with more heart? Do you see that there's going to be a turning point anytime soon here, or what?
I would like to address that, and I agree with what you're saying, Randall, and I endorse what you're saying. But on the flip side, you say, you know, why is there a Saw 3? Well, because people bought $200 million worth of tickets for Saws 1 and 2. So there will always be, I think, an appetite for movies like that, and I think the more the public buys into it, the more they're going to get made. It's just the unfortunate facts of life, supply and demand. What we have to do, going back to what my dad said when that gentleman called a few minutes ago, is we have to put out there an alternative. We have to put out there an option. And you're right, you can't take your kids to see Saw 3. You can't take, I can't imagine on a first date you're going to go see Exorcist 3, unless you're into some really different stuff. But, you know, we have to just put out there what we put out there. And eventually, I think, as Lamar said, people are going to start buying into it. They're going to want the, they're going to get tired of watching people hack each other up. They're going to get tired of the explosions, the violence, the car chases. And I enjoy a good popcorn movie, too. But, again, I go back to what I said. As filmmakers, it's our job to entertain. But I think we're either building up society or breaking them down with our work. And we've at least taken the path of at least trying to make a difference, a positive impact on society with our work. And as long as we keep doing that, I think we're doing our job, and hopefully people will buy tickets for it.
Right. Now, who do you see out there doing the kinds of films that you would go see? What kind of films are you going to see in other filmmakers that are creating these?
Well, the kind of films
put you on the spot.
Who's going to get my $10 and my wife's $10? You know, for us to go to the theater, Randall, it's got to be a unique picture. There's got to be something. Usually, frankly, it's a picture that our son recommends to us, or we know somebody involved with the production. You know, that's pretty much it for me.
I'll sometimes go see a film for a filmmaker's sake, regardless of the story content. But I stopped going to see. I used to go to like two movies a week up until about 3 years ago. I just stopped because it's honestly, it's like what you were saying, Randall. It's just the same old, same old, same old. It's very rare that a film comes along that'll inspire me enough to go to the film, to the movies, and spend, you know, $10 a ticket and popcorn and parking and you know, all that. And we know that as filmmakers. You know, when we sat down and decided what we were going to do and how we were going to do it, what is going to make people spend the $40 or $50 to go to see a movie in the theaters tonight? And that's the only thing we have to offer is motivational, inspirational, things that breed hope into people, because I believe that's something that will endure the test of time. I believe it will be something that when all the blood, films and explosive films and the action films have done their thing. What else you got? You got the heart of the story, and it all comes down to going backwards before all the special effects. And as you said, Randall, films getting way out there, pushing the edge. It all goes down to good storytelling, and that's all we have.
Yeah, that's really in Hollywood. It really does all begin with the script and telling a good story. And the more that people can identify with the characters, the better. I mean, when I found myself, there's a point in the film, I'm not going to give it away, but something very shocking happens on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I blurted a four-letter word out loud in the theater, and I caught myself because, you know, it was such, I was so invested in the characters watching the story when that event happens. It was like I was there on the field watching it. You sort of created that sense in the movie that you're actually there witnessing the events and that you're actually there watching the game the way it was shot.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about how you actually work with your Phil Jean, the director,
and the
director to achieve that. Was that something that you really wanted to get? Is that feel that you're actually there watching the game right there?
Well, that was very important to us. Number one, we all, before we started the film, everybody agreed on one thing: honor the documentary. It's got to be real. It's got to be real in the prison. It's got to be real on the football field. It's got to be real on the street. And I don't want to mislead your audience. There's some hard stuff in Gridiron Gang on the street, but that's the world that these kids come from. I've been on the street. I've been in these homes. I've had kids die at my feet. It's real. But at the same time, it was important to us that our picture was real frame by frame, as if you were at an actual football game, and we're very fortunate to get, in my opinion, Alan Graff, who did all our stunts and coordinated the football. Shane, you want to add to that?
Well, I do. And besides Alan Graff doing an amazing job, you know, Justin Reamer, his assistant, but we also got the actual NFL film guys to shoot all the football footage. Our cameramen were the guys that give you all that incredible footage when you watch the NFL Network or ESPN or, you know, Steve Sable's show. And those guys not only do an amazing job doing, you know, 80 to 100 plays on a Sunday without rehearsals, but they had the luxury of having 3 plays a day blocked out perfectly, and they were able to capture football, I think, as you've never seen it. And that's one thing that some people have really commented on, is you really got in there, like you said, Randall, and made me feel like I was actually in the game watching it.
Yeah, because other films like Remember the Titans or the movie that's out about the Philadelphia Eagles team, which I went to see. And after I got out of that film, Invincible, I think, yeah. And I saw that after I saw Gridiron Gang, and I thought, it's not the same experience. I mean, that movie was like, okay, I'm there watching a movie, but your film, it was totally a different thing. I was like right there. So I think your decision to have the NFL guys there working with Jeff Cutter, your DP,
was just
a really, really smart move.
We had another tremendous benefit also, is that aside from Alan Graff's great work in stunt coordinating, is that Dwayne The Rock played football. And he is an athlete, you know, 7-time world champion wrestler. This guy knows passion, commitment, the obsession of the game, if you will. I mean, I played football. Shane and I both raced motorcycles. And it takes that certain level of involvement from start to finish that Dwayne brought to this project, whether we were practicing on the field, you know, the lot, basically, in the prison, or on the actual field playing football. He had that incredible drive, in my opinion, that only someone that has lived it can portray it. And he did it flawlessly.
Yeah.
So what's your next move from here? What's the next thing? Are you working on the Iron Man
We're working on a few projects. We have the Iron Man project that we spoke about. We have a NASCAR film called Daytona based on Kelly Sutton, who is a current NASCAR driver who is living with multiple sclerosis. Her story, it makes Tina Turner's upbringing look like a day at the park. And her overcoming tremendous odds. We have a motocross story. We have a lot of things. I don't want to sound like we're only doing sports films. We have quite a few things that we're developing and getting ready to pull the trigger on that. The most important thing, as I said earlier, for us is doing films that motivate and inspire people. The world of sports is one way to really do that. We also have, you know, comedies, love stories, dramas about, you know, different slices of life that are life-changing or life-altering to people and overcoming some pretty bad things. And we need to sit down. We're going to sit down after all the dust settles on this, actually, Randall, I think Monday, and come up with some direction exactly what's next.
Okay, well, that's terrific. What would both of you say to those who are sort of in film schools right now or who are inspiring to have a film career? What advice would you give them about making films, and sort of what guidance would you give them, and what kind of movies that they could potentially create that would have an effect on the world?
Well, I think, and Shane has a wonderful answer to this because I've heard him speak to large groups, but I would say this, is that everyone is gifted with something. And you know what inspires you and drives you. You're a very unique person. Fortunately, I found my niche. It was in filmmaking, and I knew the kind of films I wanted to make. I stayed away from others. We did a dozen television specials. We did very well, really established ourselves. So what I would say to anyone that wants to get into any art, but filmmaking especially, is first of all, know your craft inside and out. Let people know that you're great to work with. Get every opportunity you can. If it's sweeping the floors of a production company that's doing pictures that are respectful, I'm not talking about porn or junk. I'm talking about people that are making an honest living, trying to do films and you know, impact society one way or the other. But to, you know, our days are long in film, and there's a line around the block of people for every job behind the camera. And the thing that Shane and I think about is, okay, there's 100 people qualified for this opening position. Who are the people we're going to want to spend 10, 12, 15, 18 hours a day with? So attitude is so important. Submission is so important. And what I mean by submission is, you know, button your mouth, open your ears, and learn everything you can, and be sensitive to the time when you can contribute versus when you just sweep the floor. Let people know, or let people realize, you are the kid we want on our team. It's so important. Shane?
Yeah, I would have to agree. Follow your heart. Know your craft, because I've always felt, especially in L.A. or New York, there's thousands of kids getting off a bus every year trying to do just that. What's going to make you different? My advice is, no matter what, before your head hits the pillow every night, do something to get closer to realizing your dream, because there's too many people out there that are doing that. No excuses. Don't assume somebody's going to do it for you. Nothing's handed to you. And as I always say to kids that are coming up, don't get discouraged. You're going to get 100 no's for every yes you get. Collect every yes, put them in that basket and savor them, because for maybe every 5 yeses you get, one of them will actually come to fruition. So really just treat people really well on your way up, because you're going to meet the same people on your way down. And I think integrity, respect, and courtesy is something that goes so far in this business. I watch people make it overnight, and I watch people that struggle for years. And it's the people that are respectful, they're gracious with their success. I think they're the people that stay around. They have a staying power because they treated people a certain way. And that's the biggest advice I can give to anybody.
All right. Well, thanks, both of you. Thanks to Lee and Shane Stanley today for being with us and talking to us about Gridiron Gang. I really appreciate you coming on board today and telling us about your movie. And go see it. It's out in theaters right now, Gridiron Gang.
Thanks, man.
Well, that's a wrap for our show this week. Join us again next week as we showcase the very best in movie entertainment that inspires us towards positive change and honors the belief that simple choices can change the world. I'd like to thank our engineers, Ruben Colum and Ryan Treasure, who helped put the show together, and especially to Tom Kirsch and the rest of the Catfish Groove Farm band for our theme music. You can hear more of their really cool tunes at catfishgroovefarm.com. And please tell your friends about where to find our program right here on SeventhWaveNetwork.com. And remember, you are the writer, producer, director, and star of your own movie that's called Your Life. So make it a blockbuster, and it'll be a classic. Until next time, I'm Randall Libero for Spirit of Film Conversations. We'll see you next week.